evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is February 23rd, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. We never do money and markets on the last week of the month, but I wanted to make an exception to the rule today because I think there are matters that require immediate attention. They're important enough that we need to discuss it this week. First, let me cover events. The PDF for the wrap-up is now available for the 2016 annual wrap-up. I strongly recommend you access it. It's a great tool for helping you navigate 2017 and beyond. The hard copy will be available on March 7th. So if you want to order that through the store, then at that time you can. So I really hope you like it. I think it's a great tool to really help you in 2017. We're having lunch in Toronto with Rob Kirby on March 4th. That's a Saturday. It's not this, obviously, it's not this coming Saturday, but the Saturday following. I look forward to that. The team from BMG is going to be there as well, BMG Bullion. So very interesting group. And it'll be a small lunch. So if you're in Toronto and want to come out, please check it out on the website. Dr. Joseph Farrell Crowdfund, we're celebrating the funding of Phase 1. The Oregon has been ordered, and we've already raised approximately $1,000 for Phase 2, so we're going to celebrate with a luncheon, a long luncheon, and we've mailed that to donors, and now we've mailed it to the full update list, so we hope you join us. And then I'll be in Europe in early April. We're going to have an invitation dinner up in Friesland at Café Max. It's a hike to get there, but wow, is that a beautiful place. So we'll post that next week on the website. Then I'll be in Southern California for a speech on April 20th. We're trying to organize another event. I'll keep you posted on that. We have now mailed the Australia trip to the Australian Ale back in May 2018. That's a trip with Richard Dolan and Jason Bowden-Smith. It's a repeat of the trip I did in 2015 that was such, for me, was a really life-changing experience. We've got a great group coming. We have 16 people who've now made their deposits, and let me just remind you, the deposits are non-refundable. That leaves 4 spaces available, so my expectation is they'll probably go in a week or two. So if you're interested, please let us know. We'll try and answer your questions. But it's there's a group, several links up on the commentary that you can link to find out more about it. And we, Jason and I just did a little audio that walks you through the information at the Enlightened Events website about what we're going to be doing for those 4 days. It's really 5 days, but activities on 4. And then we still have copies of the prayer book for 2017. Somebody posted something and said, what are the actions other than prayer? Don't underestimate the power of prayer, particularly when more and more people are praying together. If you look at our situation, we are dealing at the same time with spiritual, legal, financial, political war all at the same time. And you cannot address it intelligently, particularly as a group, I think, without prayer. Some people are meditators, I'm a prayer, whichever. But we need to address the spiritual consciousness aspect if we're going to make real important headway. My theme tonight is the real action. I want you to see the real action. The real action is not in Washington. It's not even close to the Beltway. Last year, I did a series of articles. We'll put the links up, where I talked about the $6.5 trillion in undocumentable adjustments at the Department of Defense last year alone. One of the articles was Lockheed Cuts and Run, because after the $6.5 trillion went missing, Lockheed proceeded to spin its IT division that does government contracting on payment and information systems out of Lockheed into a new company that had been formed by SAIC, which the year or two before did the same thing. Now, this is a very bad sign. It means they're taking a very important lucrative power position and getting it off the corporate balance sheet, which means they're pushing the liabilities out and putting them in another company that doesn't begin to have the resources and access to assets that they do. So this looks to me like a cut and run. I also did an article called, or it started with Monica Lewinsky too, because my concern is much of the distraction and in Washington, whether it was the presidential campaign or now the beginning of the administration, is distracting us from seeing the real game. And to me, the real game is there is a major push going on at the states. It was going on during the campaign, but it's really accelerated for a constitutional convention and amendments. Now, if it succeeds, there is a significant chance, in my opinion, that the result will be the end of the republic and the end of laws supporting democratic government and individual rights and freedoms, including the potential abrogation, partial or complete, of liabilities and debts. That includes Social Security, federal pensions, debts. So this is very, very serious, because you're talking about unwinding the covenant that stands behind all of our obligations, all of our agreements, a complete diminution of legal and financial controls on essentially almost everything. There were reports last year during the summer in the New York Times about the effort to do this through ALEC, which is the Association of State Legislatures, financed by the Koch brothers. It's clearly coming from the Republican/conservative side. The immediate push is led by a group called the Convention of States, which is a project of the Citizens for Self-Governance in Austin, Texas. And what they're doing is they're seeking an Article 5 convention to propose only amendments that would impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, limits its power and jurisdiction, and impose term limits on its officials and members of Congress. Now, the problem with this, it all sounds great until you realize, wait a minute, a group of people just stole, I'll pick my number, $50 trillion, including the bailouts. So you take all the money out of the entity, and then you say, oh, now that we've taken all the money, we have to balance the budget, which means your and my assets are on the table, available to balance the budget, but the $50 trillion they just stole is off the table. Now, that is not a lawful result. Sounds great, but it's not. And so if you look at what's necessary in this situation, what is necessary is we have run the finances of the government outside of the constitutional law and the laws related to financial management, certainly since 1996, if not before, and what we need is enforcement. We don't need to change the Constitution. We need to enforce it. So what state legislators ought to be doing is working with citizens to figure out how we enforce. You know, do we create an escrow? What are the mechanisms we can create to go against the federal government as well as the banks who transacted these transactions? Remember, they're the same banks that are giving us money by printing more and more debt. So there's a fraudulent inducement process going on between the New York Fed member banks as owners of the New York Fed and the Federal Reserve, and as depository for the U.S. government and agent managing the Exchange Stabilization Fund. So I see this as being a trap. If anything, it's enabling the people who stole the $50 trillion to tear up the mechanism we could use to get the money back and hold them accountable, which is why I think they're doing everything they possibly can to tear up the Constitution. There are several reasons, but one is they don't want to have to be financially responsible for what they've done. You know, no bank robber wants to give the money back. So, again, what we need is enforcement. Now, there were several requests this week from subscribers in states that were trying to pass these. And so, literally, because I think this is so important, I stopped everything, called Edwin Vera and said, could you do an immediate interview with me on proposals for Constitution amendments and convention, what it means, what we should do about it. So he did. Great interview, great attorney. And I published it up on the website. It's public. You can pass it around, and please do. Please listen. Please pass that around. And essentially, he talks about how this could destroy America. It was interesting. I said to one radio host who I sent the interview to republish it, he wrote back and said, Con-Con is end-end. Con-Con is the fashionable name for a constitutional convention. It's a play off of Con-Com, the big comic and cartoon conference out on the West Coast. A lot is being done to make a constitutional convention seem very fashionable. So you do a play on words against CONCOM, and also the Hamilton Broadway show is part of making it all very young and fashionable. Oh, isn't it groovy to get in the room and reinvent everything? Isn't that wonderful? What a great thing to do for our exciting new future, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot being done to sort of promote this. And my concern is a lot of what we're watching in Washington is a distraction at best, but if you get a constitutional convention, then the prioritization goes on steroids, because now you're talking about, to keep Social Security coming, you're going to have to sell off all the federal lands, and the sky's the limit as to what you can rip out and prioritize at 10 cents on the dollar. Another piece of very bad news: we thought the Steven Feinberg possibility was dead. Feinberg is a venture capitalist whose firm owns many companies, but one of them is DynCorp. And there was a report on February 15th from the New York Times that Feinberg was likely to be assigned to conduct a broad review of U.S. intelligence agencies. No announcement had been made. Trump at the press con at his press conference last week said that Feinberg had offered his help, but he felt that Coates, Dan Coates, was coming in, and the intelligence professionals in the administration could handle it. Now, I did a big sigh of relief, but there continues to be stories that this is still going to happen. Now, let me tell you why this is so frightening. I won't try and compress and tell you who and what DynCorp is. The allegations of covert operations in and around DynCorp for the last 20 years are non-ending, non-stop, and unbelievable. There were two pieces of litigation in the 90s or in the early 2000s for documented sex slave trafficking by DynCorp and their networks in the in Eastern Europe. You can pick up the stories on any internet search, and they're worth reading because they're so documented. One of the outrages of the situation is after the stories were, the big first story, which was a cover story on Insight magazine, were published, I literally emailed the story to the head of IT contracting and IT at every one of the government agencies. The story was delivered, the magazine was delivered to every congressman and senator's office. And the next week, the Navy and State Department, between the two of them, gave huge new contracts to DynCorp. No one cared. In fact, one of the deputy State Department, the number two or number three guy, issued a letter saying that no corporation should be punished for the bad behavior of a few individuals. Now, the individuals include what's called the government technical representative, which is the person at the corporation who is most responsible. And if I remember correctly, that person was buying and selling humans, and keeping a human as a sex slave, and doing all of this in partnership with the local mafia. So, but these allegations have bubbled around DynCorp for years. Another was, the lead investor in DynCorp was chairman of the finance committee at Enron. And one of the reasons I started to look at Enron is if you look at who was running the information and payment systems at DOD and HUD, where all the money was going missing, those people were present on the Enron board. So my question, when I first started to look at Enron to see if Enron was laundering all the money that was disappearing out of HUD and DOD, because it was hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. And as I said, then you can't use a pizza restaurant to launder $1 trillion. You need a major sort of publicly traded corporation so you can get the most juice and avoid some of the money laundering rules. Anyway, so what came out was that after Enron went under, the Department of Justice had never asserted jurisdiction over Enron's records, but they continued to keep DynCorp managing information systems for the Department of Justice, including the PROMIS system. And if you don't know about PROMIS, look it up, PROMIS. And the SEC information systems, including, I think, the enforcement systems, which led me to say that the Department of Justice had not asserted jurisdictions over Enron records, but Enron had asserted jurisdiction over the Department of Justice records. Anyway, so one of my concerns is how DynCorp or any of its affiliate relate to the covert operations that I think are probably working the effort to compromise state legislatures on the way to getting a constitutional convention, because it looks to me like the control file operations going on behind this are very, very significant. So literally the companies we use to do disaster capitalism around the world are, you know, are they coming back to do disaster capitalism here? It's a relevant question because DynCorp lost a huge contract at the State Department last fall and had brought litigation. I don't know what the status of that litigation is, but to literally bring the lead investor in DynCorp into the White House to review all the intelligence agencies. First of all, if I was the lying career intelligence agencies, I would go absolutely bizwhack. But the other thing is giving Feinberg or having Feinberg oversee intelligence agency review and having access to the resulting information is the ultimate meta privatization. You're basically turning over the entire governmental covert side to mercenaries who are expert in disaster capitalism. Now, what does that say about the odds of the Rape of Russia scenario happening here? So, two things to watch. If we get a constitutional convention and Feinberg comes into the White House to review the intelligence agencies, the odds of the Rape of Russia scenario happening in the United States increase absolutely significantly. And one of my concerns is that part of why the equity markets are rising so strongly. In the meantime, we see very significant attacks on Trump continue. And a lot of ink has been given in the alternative media to what Soros and the new Obama Foundation and the Clintons are up to on the progressive side. That's not the group that worries me. I think there's plenty of stupid stuff going on, but one of the things you see is the Democrats around the country whose business it is to really help constituents and get something done. If you look at what they're doing, what they're saying, and there's a real movement by the Bernie Sanders supporters to take over the infrastructure of the Democratic Party at the grassroots level. There's a great article in the Wall Street Journal this week just about that. But they don't have time for stupid color revolution games, and they're sick of them. And they just and it's interesting, if you look at the polls, 73% of Americans want Congress to work with Trump, and they want the administration to be successful. Everybody understands, you know, we have to get the real work done, and they're sick of games, and, you know, they're sick of watching what's going on in Washington and seeing their money wasted. So I think the Soros-Obama line will not be anywhere near as dangerous as a lot of other people think. I think the big unanswered question is what's going on in the Republican side. We're watching a Bohemian Grove smorgasbord of what I kind of term the grumpy old men. We have Cheney and Schultz and the Koch brothers and Kissinger. Baker's in there too. I don't think of him as a grumpy old man, but he certainly represents the Bush interests. And so you've got this combination of sort of many grumpy old men, and somewhere in there, I think David Rockefeller is knocking about, particularly on the Constitutional Convention, if you look at sort of that group. I'm trying to investigate them more. Anyway, so I think there's a real danger of what the Republicans could do, because nobody plays this, you know, these kind of war games dirtier, meaner, or better than them. They're real masters at it. We saw Trump meet with Netanyahu, and right after he did, we saw an orchestrated targeting of about 60 Jewish groups in a Jewish cemetery that really got those networks up in arms and started attracting Trump over anti-Semitism. The whole thing looked way too orchestrated, not to say that the The groups attacking Trump for on anti-Semitism were the ones who did it. You know, you almost wonder if the dirty Protestant guys and the dirty Jewish guys aren't at war with each other, which is very possible. Anyway, so after Trump got beat up over anti-Semitism, which is a joke, I mean, nobody is successful in New York the way Trump is successful in New York, let alone has an Orthodox Jewish son-in-law, Jewish daughter, and Jewish grandchildren. So, Trump, you know, I think it's hard for Trump to even fathom that he would be called that. Anyway, so after Trump gets beat up on all of this, it's announced that Cheney is going to introduce Mike Pence at the Republican Jewish Coalition speech this weekend out in Las Vegas. They're going to be doing it at Sheldon Adelson's property, is one of the biggest Republican donors. Now, this is after Pence sat with Jim Baker at the Super Bowl. Following that, Baker turned up at the White House with Schultz and Paulson to market a climate change tax. It was, I guess, last weekend that Pence was over with Mattis and Tillerson in Munich. So you get the sense that poor Pence is getting squeezed between the grumpy old men and Trump and is trying to do his best to keep everybody pulling in the same directions. But it's got to be quite a squeeze right there. What's happening is, we don't see the picture clearly, but ultimately what's happening is the military-industrial complex is at war with itself. To a certain extent, that's happening because it's now spent tens of trillions of dollars creating enemies so it could fight them. And it's built an enormous national security infrastructure state, and it's run out of enemies, and now it's fighting itself. And the attack tactics being used on Trump are very similar to the ones that were used on me. And if you want to familiarize yourself better with those tactics, I'm going to post a great article I had one of my attorneys write called Anatomy of a SWAT from a Lawyer's Perspective. And it shows you there's an endless, I could write manuals. I could write many, many books, many volumes of books on all the different dirty tricks that they use. But they're really good and they're really masters of it. One of the things, of course, that comes out is a lot of what they're doing to Trump is what they're doing to you and me. And it all comes back to the fact that the digital communication systems have zero integrity. And frankly, I believe if we don't turn that around, it's going to destroy the economy because it's destroying everybody's productivity. Imagine being the president of the United States and you're trying to talk to the president, your counterpart in Australia or Mexico or another country, and everything you're saying is leaked to the press, but out of context and short excerpts, you know, and literally the other world leaders have to deny that that was what the conversation was. How in the world are you going to function? They're making it impossible. So these are very serious things. One of the things we saw come out, and I gave Obama the Scorpion Award of the Year, I'm sorry, of the week, was he had put in place a booby trap, really a landmine for Trump, where literally 3 weeks before he left the administration, he signed something basically requiring the NSA give significant amounts of data and share with the other 16 agencies, which is just an invitation for leaks of this kind. You know, so it really was setting up a booby trap. I'm sure Trump can reverse it. And I can't imagine Obama did it on his own. You know, that's the kind of thing you do at the request of the grumpy old men or David Rockefeller or somebody. So there's some grumpy old men behind that one, and it's a nasty business. There are a couple of documentaries that are great examples of seeing the machinery work, and I think it's very valuable to understand that machinery. Watch Satellite Fever, a documentary about how the military-industrial complex tried to corner Eisenhower, and he succeeded in not letting, he wouldn't let them bully him. It's a marvelous documentary. Another is Shut Up and Sing, which is the Shriek-O-Meter turning on the Dixie Chicks when they came out and opposed the Iraq invasion. And it's really much done by the same group that's doing this to Trump. So take a look at it, or the same line of expertise that's doing it. So take a look at Satellite Fever and Shut Up and Sing if you want to learn more. one of my One of my favorite comments was John McCain was over at Munich and made a complete fool of himself. It was terrible. He was basically walking around and dishing Trump and dishing our national security and dishing the future of this country. And I just think he deserves to be taken behind the barn and spanked. It was pathetic. And it's another thing that tells me that the fear about things like pedophilia is creating a pressure that people like McCain can't tolerate. The bigger problem here, and it's a serious problem for the grumpy old men, is that the debt growth model is over. Now, if you're going to re-engineer the federal budget, you're going to have to decentralize and optimize by place and permit much more transparency. It's one of the reasons Trump is pushing transparency like crazy, because he knows that's what you need to get productivity. I had a great conversation with Richard Dolan this week, which we're going to publish next week, on this problem of the grumpy old men. They're facing, because of technology, enormous deflation, and that makes it near impossible to pull out huge amounts of money. They need to keep the hidden system of finance going in the black budget, let alone to keep it secret. They just stole $50 trillion. So their solution is to complete the coup d'etat, started with a financial coup d'etat, you know, engineer a legal coup d'etat through a constitutional convention and move to friendly fascism with heavy mind control and slow depopulation. If you look in the annual wrap-up, it's one of the scenarios that I put in. Now, the problem is it won't work. I think the chances ultimately of this happening are much smaller than they do, obviously. The biggest problem is going to be the Midianite thing. The more you move to enforce even more dysfunctional central control with all these different factions who are deeply distrustful of each other for very good reason, you're going to get what I call the Midianite thing. And I'm referring to what happened in the story of Gideon in the Bible in Judges chapter 6 through 9. When Gideon's army was able to throw the Midianites out of Israel because the Midianites were so suspicious and distrustful of each other that they killed each other. And it's a great, it's one of my favorite Bible stories. So that's why it's imperative that you and I keep turtling towards transparency and real solutions, because it's going to take millions of us just doing it on a sort of open source, out of control basis. And if you look at how much wealth can be created when trust is possible, oh my God, it's fantastic. So we are the wealth builders. We can create much more wealth. Now, the problem is when you have a constitutional convention, let alone put mercenaries in charge of or giving them access to, you know, all of our knowledge in the intelligence agencies, it's really frightening. I mean, it's kind of like inviting the fox to inspect the hen house before he robs it. So with these two moves, whether, you know, sort of what you're doing with the covert line and then what you're doing through the constitutional convention and any amendments, you're basically tearing up the remaining legal and financial controls that could stop a piratization. What that does is that signals to scorpions and piggies, you know, happy times are here again. And literally their greed goes out of control, and that's what causes them to start fighting. And it's, you know, I saw it happen in Washington many times on a much smaller scale, because now we're talking about everything. We're talking about all the federal lands. We're talking about everything. Anyway, but I've seen them go crazy over, you know, anywhere from $50,000 to, you know, billions. And it's a kind of madness. And it's very interesting to watch the people who traditionally were chosen for positions in Washington were the people who had been tested in those experiences and didn't go along with the madness. They just kept their, they stayed completely grounded and focused and were totally clear it wasn't their money and managed it professionally. And, you know, those people are very, very valuable when you can finally figure out who they are and how they work. But and Trump's got a bunch of them in his cabinet because they've been trained to deal with major, major money. Now, again, are they going to be Titanic turners or piggies? But right now what we're seeing behind the scenes in the swamp is we're seeing several groups of scorpions and piggies who are just licking their chops, and it's turning them into madmen. And that's why I think that we're going to see a lot worse noise than we see now, because there is nothing worse than when Scorpio and piggies decide to go to war with each other over lots of enticing assets when their greed is rising. It's amazing to watch. It's another reason why I think there's a 50% or better chance of a pedophilia scandal this year. I'm very glad we did that interview with John, because I think you're going to need that. I'm working on a commentary on this topic, because I think I want to describe a little bit more about why I think that the odds are reasonably good it's going to happen. I would encourage you to circulate the truth of pedophilia. What I'm finding all over the country is, and all over the world, is there's much more open discussion about it and much more willingness to look at what's going on. I think Trump has pushed and punched so many holes in the official reality. You know, he's kind of busted out the official reality that now people are saying, okay, well, it's safe. We can talk about the, you know, reality. And here's the truth. If you circulate the truth of this thing, you can sideline a significant number of scorpions and piggies. And there are risks about starting something that is this shocking and horrible, but we definitely will need a truth and reconciliation process, because there are a whole lot of people who have been compromised who have potential to come back to Titanic turning, and we need them to come back to Titanic turning. So I think it's going to get a lot rougher. Two more examples of proof that it's going to get rougher. The Russian ambassador to the UN had a heart attack. It looks to me like it's an assassination. I would give the odds of it being an assassination better than 95%. It's a way of deleting databases. This guy knew too much. It's the fourth Russian ambassador death in a relatively short period. And then the other thing is the media wars. If I've been listening to some of the members of the media who have temper tantrums and really, really are in a state of serious upset. And what you realize is they are in such an extraordinary state of denial about the real economic problems in the country and the extent of the material emissions. They really haven't faced the material emissions in the media, because they're all sitting in Washington or New York with big salaries. They really have been sheltered. So now, one of the things I'm hearing from so many people is they're mistaking the shrieking and the attacking by the corporate media as being meaningful and powerful. It's not. I'm regularly seeing people far overestimate the power of the shriekers. Now, yes, they can have a impact on the people who still watch that stuff and believe it, but their market share seems to be shrinking. And if you look at the polls about both Democrats and everyone wanting the administration to go to work and people in Washington to go to work and deal with real problems, I think the sensibility and the common sense of the people out on the line doing the work in the grassroots is coming to bear. So the media wars between the administration and the corporate media are probably going to get a lot worse before they get better. And some of it will be the swamp, but some of it will be the fact that you have an establishment who is in deep denial. And the best thing we could do in this country is to help them get out of deep denial. Now, as Tina Turner says, we can make this nice or rough, and it's going to go through patches where it's rough. But just remember, we need to go through this process. Now, report card. If you look at, in the last 4 weeks, what Trump and his team have done, it's quite remarkable. So remember, it's only been 30-plus days. First, he's moved the Clintons and Bushes out of the line of power. Now, the Bush clan is trying to come back in through the Constitutional Convention route, so I assure you, you know, they're around, and they're, you know, I said that's the real action. So they certainly haven't gone away. Second, he's canceled the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, there are two other trade agreements that still have to be dealt with. three, he started to address immigration. We can all agree or disagree, but the reality is we cannot be a nation of laws if our laws say one thing, but we're doing something way outside. And that's in many areas. Immigration is only one of them, but you have to deal with immigration. And the question for any country is, what is the pace of immigration that it can take it? You know, how much, how fast? It was interesting to see him back down on deporting the Dreamers. And that's a very good sign, because it shows you that, you know, that this is somebody who really cares about humanity. So number four, he has put out an executive order on international crime, narcotics trafficking, and human trafficking. He has triggered, directly or indirectly, there's been an enormous wave of human trafficking arrests over the last 30 days at the state and local level. And you can tell that by lots of different sort of anecdotal sources and what I see personally, the vets, the police, the sheriff, law enforcement, they really believe that they're now supported and created safety and stopping the flow of drugs. And so I think, you know, as long as that mood and that feeling of support continues, a lot of fantastic things can happen. He's nominated a constitutionalist jurist to the Supreme Court. He's recruited an A-list team, now obviously all conservative side, but it really is the A-list. And the beauty of that team is there are very few lawyers. They're all doers. They're business people, they're generals, they're philanthropists, but very few lawyers. It's a good sign. I'm sure it's driving the lawyers crazy. And he's attacked the Beltway media, and nobody deserves to be beaten up worse than them. I mean, the queens and kings of material emissions. He's implemented an executive order on regulatory relief and started Congress working on a legislative package for regulatory relief. So he's canceled the Obamacare fine, which a lot of people were scared about this year, and they were worried about it for the April filing. He started a tax reform effort before his Treasury Secretary and OMB got approved. They got approved last week, and now Mnuchin has said he's targeting August to complete a tax reform effort. They've reversed the regulations to shut down the coal industry, because the coal industry was really being shut down as a regulatory matter, not a market matter. Now, the market's going to get them anyway, but it'll be a much more natural process. He finalized the pipeline decision that was really being drawn out in a very negative way. And there are pros and cons on the pipeline. The sort of the argument for the pipeline, if you look at the environmental risks of danger of moving all that oil by trains, which I'm sure Buffett would have preferred, you know, it was a lot more dangerous than the pipeline. He's got the Air Force One contract renegotiated in a way that's going to save us a lot of money. He's got scores of companies reorienting to do a lot more in the United States, and a number of them have committed to do things in pretty important and significant numbers. He's had productive meetings in person with the UK, with Theresa May, and with Abe, the Japanese leader. He's, let's hope we get a DC New York bullet train. I would love that. But he's now spoken or met with 30 world leaders, his counterparts in 30 plus countries. He's moved his family, which is not a big deal. I mean, it's not a small deal. So his son-in-law and daughter have moved to Washington, bought a house. He's living in Washington. The first lady and their son are still in New York for the school arrangements. Given the security issues, I think that is a very smart thing to do. I think they have real reasons to be concerned about safety. And so staying up in New York for now makes a lot of sense. But the move, to the extent they've done it, is a huge job in terms of time and effort to get adjusted. Finally, they have been doing an amazing job in terms of media, with tweeting regularly, and White House videos. We really need a Trump TV channel from the White House, I think. And but they've been doing videos and trying to provide as much direct access. He's been doing listening meetings with a variety of groups. I just put one of the listening videos up on the website for a meeting he did on trafficking, but he's been meeting with a ton of CEOs. It's called a listening meeting, and he's just trying to listen to lots of different people and groups. Now, if you look at that list, one of the reasons you're seeing everybody say, well, this place is in disarray, and because you, I don't think you've ever seen an administration get so much done in the first 30 days. I mean, he basically is walking into Washington and saying, okay, here are all my promises. Now I'm going to implement. Boom, 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 boom. Very entrepreneurial, very much like a New York real estate developer. Of course, Washington is not ready for that. Washington is into process and, you know, they're not used to it. And this guy's going to push, 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 push. And he's got a team of people who are going to push, 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 push. And, Washington is a place that thrives on bureaucratic complexity. So a bunch of entrepreneurs with a big picture in mind who are pushing, 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 and the bureaucrats who are overwhelmed with bureaucratic complexity pushing back, you can see why you get a lot of noise. But remember, this is a team that's going to be performance-oriented. And what they want to do is get the economy going again. And I think they understand how bad the economy is in a way that the corporate media has no idea, but they understand how bad the sort of problems under the rugs. Anyway, so it's stirring a lot of pots, but it's acting faithfully on a significant number of promises. So it's very impressive. Also, Trump did a rally. He continues to communicate directly, and I think he did a rally down in Melbourne, Florida. And I put the video up on the website if you want to watch it, but it's very interesting. Finally, I had a great talk with Richard Dolan, as I said, about the budget issues and or the sort of problems behind the budget that are going to make redoing the budget particularly difficult for the Trump administration. And I explained to Richard Dolan what Trump's psychology as a real estate developer meant to his attitude about safety. And I think for an insight into the inner gestalt of real estate developers and how they relate to crime and safety, I think it would be very helpful for you. So again, that's a great discussion. So listen to it next week. Money and markets. The U.S. dollar is now back up a little bit. It's at 101.05, still down for the year about 1.2%. The fixed income markets seem to be doing a little bit better. The Fed is clearly indicating they're going to raise interest rates March. They next meet on March 15, 16, but it looks like that's priced into the market. But beware the Ides of March. You never know. TLT, the long treasury ETF, is now up 1.5% for the year. The intermediate IEF up 90 basis points. AGG up 70 basis points. That's the bond aggregate. And junk still doing well at 2.41%. The S&P now up almost 6%. It's really 5.75%. Home builders doing well, up 5.41%, slightly behind. Europe at 4.36%. Germany at 5%, the developed markets minus North America, 5.37%. China still holding up despite the sort of diminishment of the stimulus, up 12% on the large caps and up almost 12% on the small caps. Emerging markets doing very well, up 11%. Commodities down a half a percent for the year, almost flat. GLD, it looks just like last year. GLD is up 8.51%, SLV, the silver ETF, up 14%, and oil coming up a little bit. It's still down 2% for the year. I talk a lot in the wrap-up about why I think the economics of food may be different in the future than it's been for the last couple of decades. Please pay attention. We watched the Buffett 3G partnership. They're just buying food companies and buying food companies. So they had Kraft make an offer for Unilever, which got turned down. It didn't work out. And then spun around and took their Burger King Tim Horton holding and bought Popeye Chicken. So you can see they're off and running, and there's real consolidation in the food area. And I want you to pay attention to it because I think they're anticipating rising food prices and inelastic demand for food. And that's the fundamental economics. Now, it turns out we're having big weather problems, including in California. So there's, you know, Buffett is clearly seeing a long-term trend, and I think it's important. So read the 2016 annual wrap-up and access the food series if that's of interest. But you need to think about, okay, if we're facing rising food prices and all sorts of difficulty with supply and quality, how are you going to make sure you have a great food supply? Our hero this week is Robert De Niro. He did a press conference with Kennedy. They offered a $100,000 reward for any journalist or investigator who could come up with proof on a variety of things related to vaccines. And then he did an interview with Cheryl Atkinson where he said, you know, the government's wrong. The science isn't clear. There's a lot of science arguing that there is a connection between autism and vaccines. And if you look at the science that's arguing that there isn't, I don't see proof. So I don't think this issue is settled. And that's why we put out the 100,000. And it's fabulous. Now, I have to tell you, in my opinion, Robert De Niro is risking his life to do this. He's a very brave man. So absolutely keep Robert De Niro in your prayers. And I have to say, I don't think it would have happened if Trump hadn't busted a hole in the official reality wall on many issues, but including vaccines. So bravo to Robert De Niro, and bravo to Trump, and bravo to Kennedy. And let's go to the movies. I have a wonderful documentary about my childhood love, which was Snowman. It was an open jumper who Harry DeLay had saved literally from the glue factory. He paid $80 for him and thought he would make a great horse for. He was the riding instructor at a girls' school. And so this was just a reliable old plow horse who was gonna help him give riding lessons to the high school girls. And instead, Snowman turned out to be a fantastic open jumper and ended up being the U.S. champion several years, I think 2 or 3 years in a row. Anyway, so the thing that's magical about the story is that if you look, they have a lot of videos and photographs of Snowman's career and DeLeo's career. But if you look at the shared intelligence and the love and connection between this guy and the horse, it's so beautiful to watch. Now, I'm a horse lover, and I used to ride open jumpers and train open jumpers. So, so it has I have a special love for all of this. And I've seen DeLay perform after Snowman. I never got to see Snowman in person. Anyway, but it's a marvelous documentary. And if you have kids or grandkids who love horses, it's a great one to watch. Our interview this week is with Dr. Laura Thompson. I got very upset because I was seeing so many families get churned by health systems because they didn't know how to use and access holistic and conventional health. They've grown up believing that they should just, you know, if they need to know something, they should go to the doctor and believe the doctor and do whatever the doctor says. It just doesn't work like that. You know, we really have to be our own doctors. And I have people in my network who are phenomenally knowledgeable about how to navigate both holistic and conventional health systems. And they try and get the best of both worlds, and they know how to do it, and they know how to do it economically. And the reality is, anything that you can heal with natural methods or holistic or with your own knowledge and actions is typically far more economic. But then if you really need conventional and you can make sure you can access conventional in a way that gets the best that conventional has to offer when it's something you really need from conventional and you make sure the providers are people of integrity, et cetera. So if you know how to navigate that system and use it when you really need it, then you get the best of both worlds. And so I know people who do that, and it's marvelous to see how marvelous their lives are as a result of having invested the time and knowledge to be excellent at doing that. And other people just sort of blissfully go into the system and believe everything they're told, and they're absolutely getting churned and destroyed by it. And it really scares me. So I was seeing examples of families that were really being destroyed by trusting a system and not knowing how to navigate it, and not being able to explain to them why they could literally become their own doctors, who then manage and govern accessing different healthcare providers and figuring out how to navigate the system. And so I called Dr. Thompson and said, please, will you help me? Because we've got to find a way to help people understand that this is a different world, and they're going to completely have to change how they approach the whole system, because you can't wait if you wait until you have cancer before you learn how to deal effectively, you know, what causes cancer and how you can deal with it, it's much harder to deal with it then, because it takes time. It takes a lot of time to change your paradigm and to become expert at this. And Laura has some great ideas, including the fact that she literally coaches people, and she'll take a family and teach them how to become literally healthcare independent. And I think it's a very important thing to do. And I will tell you, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is a financial matter. This is the number one thing you can do to help your finances is become your own governor of your own healthcare, because this is how families are getting destroyed financially, by being churned by the system or by having health problems that don't get addressed properly by the system. And so this is critical to your financial well-being, particularly in a low interest rate environment. So if you're struggling to get decent yields on the financial side, you can't afford to make unbelievably financially expensive healthcare mistakes. You just can't afford it. Okay, lots of great questions. Thank you for the leaks. Thank you for the links. Great links. Dear Catherine, you posted an article this week by The Saker in which you said the Trump presidency is over and the deep state is won. What is your opinion on this? He was way too depressed about the situation. I disagree with Saker's description. It was never about Trump versus the deep state. It's about the deep state versus the deep state. Trump could never have gotten elected unless part of the deep state supported him. I think part of what he's reacting to is the fear of a rape of Russia scenario, which is very real and present. And so I don't think we're out of the woods yet, and I think this is going to be a fight for years to come. And I know what concerns Saker, because if the Republicans lost, I mean, if we get a constitutional convention and the mercenaries running the covert line in this country, then the piggies and scorpions are going to be out of control, and they're going to be out in full force. And I think he sees the grumpy old men, and he sees the piggies and the scorpions, and he's very much afraid of what I'm afraid of. But I don't think the game is far from over. I think this is not a sprint, it's a long distance run. Now, would the grumpy old men like to take Trump out and put Pence in? Maybe. I don't think they've decided to do that yet. Right now, they're just focused on trying to whip Trump into obedience. And so the question is, can we keep the grumpy old men at bay long enough? And part of that comes down to what happens with the Constitutional Convention. Catherine, can you pray and post some counsel on what is going on right now? It looks like the Fourth Reich is engaging in open warfare and actually willing to expose the existence of an American Gestapo. Folks who don't like Trump are cheering this, just more evidence they really don't understand how grave what just happened really is. This is the most insane thing I've ever seen. The IC asserting openly that, in fact, they run the country. Don't assume... all the yaya about the intelligence agencies are in a revolt against Trump, that's completely not true. There is no evidence to suggest that at all. There are significant leaks, but it only takes but a few people to do those leaks. Now that we found out that Obama spread the data from NSA all across the agencies. The reality is, you know, the problem here is the grumpy old men, and they're parts of the intelligence agency that will be responsive. But I have yet to see any proof that the intelligence agencies are revolting against Trump at all. There have been serious leaks. Remember, those leaks can be foreign intelligence agencies. They could be telcos. I just think it's more complicated than you think. So there's a lot of noise both in the independent media and in the corporate media. And the reality is what's happening is the shriekometer is turned to high volume. And that's why I think you need to understand that the shriekometer doesn't run the country. The administration really does have control of many of the lines of power. And they're moving to act on many different lines, including the human trafficking. And that's part of where the pushback is coming. The other thing is, if you look at where the shrieking is coming from, there are different nodes of power. So you have the Soros-Obama group. You've got the grumpy old men on the Republican side. And then you've got the corporate media in a death spiral. So it's not one thing. It's multiple things. And, of course, Trump is stirring the pot because he is insisting on performance. And he's pushing Washington as to process in a way that they don't like to be pushed. And that's part of the noise. But you need to differentiate between noise and performance, because the polls show clearly the Americans want D.C. to focus on bread and butter issues. And that's what Trump is doing. And it's causing noise, but it's causing noise getting the performance that he wants. And I think the reason what we're seeing, you know, if you look at the tape of the rally, I mean, talk about a guy who's off the charts popular with his constituency. If you look at the polls of Trump versus the press, Trump's winning by 10 points. The America trusts Trump a lot more than they trust the press. And they don't trust Trump on everything. So they're not saying Trump is impeccable whatsoever. He's not. But I would say when it comes to getting to the gist of what's important, Trump's much better than the corporate media by a mile. Next question. I've heard you speak several times about the Constitution being a covenant. We need to enforce it and get back the 17-plus trillion that has disappeared from the federal government. We are actively working to stop an Article 5 convention resolution in the Utah State Legislature. How can we stop the states from making such a mistake? Most legislators do not understand nullification. So do you have realistic and workable ideas that legislators can quickly understand about how to enforce the Constitution, in addition, that is, to giving Trump time to turn things around? Okay, so when I got this, I called the subscriber, stopped everything, organized the interview with Vieira. We published it publicly, so you can send it all around. It's not just for subscribers. We had a video made, put that up, tweeted it out. The transcript will be here next week, and got it republished around the internet. I just heard that you and your team were successful in defeating this effort in Utah Senate. Bravo. Unfortunately, I discovered that the Senate here in Tennessee had passed the same thing last week. I hadn't realized, so I'm trying to find out the information from National on what we have to do to stop it here. But what I would stress is, everyone, please do the same in your state. Find out what's happening with the push for an Article 5 convention in your state, where it is, and do everything you can to make sure it doesn't get passed this year. And I can't tell you how important it is to stop this and hold this off. If you want to start someplace, check with the Vieira commentary. We're going to put up some links to that this weekend, so we'll build a little related reading. Now, yes, it would be great if we had, you know, documentation and a clear mechanism that legislatures could pick up to enforce the current Constitution. I would love to have some attorneys who would be willing to help me figure out what the practical ideas are. I have a lot of knowledge and ideas about what could work financially, but the question is, what could work legally and politically for legislators? And every once in a while, I'll ask for attorneys who are willing to help me figure that out. But if anybody wants to volunteer, I would love to start to put sort of ideas and documentation together as to what could be done. Hi, Catherine. Do you agree with the Saker that the neocons and the deep state have neutered the Trump presidency? It's over, folks. What exactly does this mean to the average U.S. citizen? Is Obama trying to stage a comeback? Do the Democrats think they can regain power by force? Please keep up your great tweets and comments on the Salieri Report. These are troubling times. No, what's happening is there is a serious, serious war between the Titanic Turners and the Piggies and the Scorpions. And what's important to understand is that war is not just in the Beltway, it's in every county and every even household in the country. Are we going to be Titanic Turners, or are we going to be Piggies, and are we going to be Scorpions or Scaredy Cats? And so, if you don't know what I mean by Titanic Turners, Piggies, and Scorpions, there's an article I published, Who's Who in the Transition, and it's in the annual wrap-up. You can read it there. So you've got a group of Titanic Turners who are really trying to turn the ship in Washington, and we've seen a lot of Titanic Turners jumped in. I talk about when David Stockman and Steve Forbes and Drudge jumped in and said, no, we've got to have tax reform. So this is really a spiritual, legal, and financial, literally a war between the Titanic Turners, the Piggies, and the Scorpions, and every person needs to jump in. And everybody can help. So you can, there's an aspect that's spiritual, and if you just want to pray, you can pray. But there are many, many things because it's going to come down to a county by county. The 3,100 counties, all political power flows first and foremost county by county. And so it's going to take everyone. But the question is, who's going to determine what happens next? Are the Piggies and the Scorpions going to rape the place, or are the Titanic Turners going to be able to turn it around? And remember, both are represented in the deep state. Both are represented in the general population. Both are represented in the Democratic and Republican parties. This is bipartisan. And this is why I keep talking about leadership, because what this comes down to is you and I and every one of us have to be Titanic Turners every day, all the time, and reminding everybody in Washington we expect them to turn the Titanic. So, and anything we can do to corner and depower the Piggies and the Scorpions is great. And that's why I say it's time to have a, it's time to come clean on what's been going with pedophilia and human trafficking, because we are entering a process that will determine whether we are a human society or inhuman. And the reality is we're not going to get to a human society unless we protect the, everyone, including the least powerful among us. And that gets back to the children. Hi, Catherine. I'm living on Social Security. I work 2 days a week to make ends meet. I've listened to your money in markets and annual reports. I'm better understanding financial dynamics at one level, but have little to no idea how to translate that into an action plan, despite your good advice. When you're 71 years old, have to make ends meet and have little money to manage, I think one has few choices. If you could tailor some of your commentary to folks who struggle to get it and structure advice to folks who have 250K, 100K, and or less, it would be very helpful. I've applied your advice as best I can to the extent I can understand it and done the following. I have no debt. Great. I own rights to occupy a co-op apartment with modest fees. Great. I've switched my checking account to a community bank. Great. Then they go on. I sold stocks and muni bonds through Schwab out of fear. I don't want to use Schwab, Fidelity, or Price Waters, because I think, but don't know, that they're bad guys. Forgive my oversimplification. I just don't know how better to evaluate these brokerages. When it comes to securities custodian, you're going to need to be in the system. So you're going to need, and you're going to need to be with someone fairly well capitalized. So these firms are all in the system. They're all well capitalized. Whenever a firm has large money management and no independent investment banking or trading and sort of risk derivatives position, I feel reasonably comfortable with them. And so these are companies that I don't know Price Waters, but certainly Schwab and Fidelity have big money management flows and are not trading derivatives and with big derivative positions. So I think, I'm not as concerned about them as you are. So if you're going to do securities, I wouldn't avoid firms like that, because you just, if you're going to do securities, you have to be in the system. When you look at doing securities, we are in an environment, it's a much longer conversation, and I'll look for a way to do something and talk about model portfolios. I don't like to give investment advice, and I don't give investment advice on the Solari report for legal reasons, but there are some things I can say. In the current environment, the thing that has performed the best are index funds. Vanguard is the biggest provider of index funds and has the lowest fees, and one of the reasons their performance has been good is because their fees are so low. I mean, they're really the sort of the wholesaler approach. And interestingly enough, because of a variety of things in the environment, the index fees have really, the index funds have really outperformed most money managers. Now, traditionally, about 20-25% of the money managers can outperform the index funds, but it wouldn't surprise me if that has been, that number has been lowered for the last year just because of the way the market's been. The challenge of doing index funds is there is no doubt when we go from a bull to a bear market that you're much better off getting out. The problem is figuring out when you make that bull to bear transition, particularly because the U.S. market is so high. The second thing is, and one way to solve that, in fact, is to do global allocations. So you could do a world equity fund and help to avoid some of that problem. The reality is we're in an environment where the liquidity is going to be, or the volatility could be extreme, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to get out when things are down. If anything, you want to buy when things are down. So you're doing the opposite. So don't put money into anything that you're not willing to keep it in. But I think you might take a look at what you can do with index funds. The question is, when do you do it? And the reality is 95% of the increases traditionally in the U.S. equity market came between November and June. So, and we've gotten quite a big run for the last couple of months, and the U.S. market is very high. So, if 95% of the upside in the U.S. markets come, which is a big portion of the global markets right now, if that comes between, you know, November and June, I would say, the question is do we have hopes of getting a major correction in the summer? Now, if Trump gets tax reform, it's off to the races. If he doesn't, if it stalls, we could get a major correction, and that would be an opportunity. So I would take a look seriously at what you can do in index funds. The world is moving to equities. So I think I talked last week about the fact that the Norwegian Wealth Fund just moved its allocations from 60% to 70% to equities. So I would have a real come to Jesus conversation with yourself about how much you feel comfortable putting into equities. And I would look for, you know, a correction moment to get back in. And to get back in an amount, which is that amount which you can safely and comfortably live with the possibly extreme volatility that we're going to be seeing. But I will look to do more on model portfolios. I would certainly have a provision for a 3-month hiccup. So I would make sure you're stockpiling certainly non-perishables and be in a position with cash and coins to go for a 3-month period without, if Katrina happened where you are, what would you do and how would you manage it? So I would definitely make sure that you had invested in that. One of my favorite DVDs is Dr. Gwen Scott doing walking around her kitchen for 3 DVDs and showing you how to turn your kitchen into essentially a hospital. It's one of my favorite natural health DVDs, and I think it's still available. And then they continue, thank God I found you. I now track you, Saker and Joseph Farrell. I use a PEMF mat 3 times a day and feel great. Good. Well, see, you're investing in that. In that being your own doctor thing. It's great. Many blessings, Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I see your upcoming program on medical care. In the U.S., the FDA estimated deaths due to adverse drug reactions to be the 4th leading cause of death in the EU, the EMEA estimates. It is the fifth leading cause of death in hospitalized patients. I worked in the safety department of a pharmaceutical company and understand the work that happens there. And finally, recently finished an MS in regulatory compliance from Northwestern University. I thoroughly researched this topic and was shocked at the data. However, no one wants to hear what I have to say. I want to hear what you have to say. I am no longer working in the pharma industry. Pharma is not entirely to blame, though. There is plenty of blame to go around. I would love to talk further with you about my research if you're interested. It is primarily based on the review of 15-plus years of FDA to Congress testimony. I've lost friends over this information. People want their drugs, fake food, and fake news. I hope someone from your team reaches out to me. I have a publisher interested, but it's scary to step out of the accepted view in today's world. I sent your email to John Rappaport. He often writes about this topic, and I'm really hoping he follows up because he has such a deep knowledge and deep history with this topic. He would be the perfect person. So I'm kind of hoping he follows up. Do me a favor, if he doesn't follow up, would you let me know? Catherine, I just read your special report featuring Edwin Vieira and the convention crisis. In his argument about competitive currencies, the good doctor failed to mention, he goes on to talk about treasury notes. I'm assuming that treasury notes are backed by U.S. gold holdings, and then accounting of said holdings would be critical to the amount of treasury notes available. Is this not a viable option? Could you please ask Dr. Vieira? Issuing treasury notes in state and local currencies are all viable options, and I don't think you have to limit it to the U.S. gold holdings. The U.S. has tremendous and valuable assets in addition to gold, so whatever the gold holdings are. So I think there's tremendous potential for treasury notes in state and local currencies. It's a question of political options. And so how do you achieve it politically? Because remember, every president who's tried to do it has been assassinated or had an attempted assassination. So it's clearly a very sensitive issue. I'm trying to find an old Slary interview where you told a friend about having a discussion with a friend about learning metabolisms. You then go on to describe it. I told this story several times, but you're correct. It goes absolutely to the heart of what we're dealing with. You had said, in any case, do you see this entropy in our culture at the moment? What risks and opportunities do you see emerging for an information-rich minority while navigating an increasingly chaotic and aggressive majority? It's interesting. Yes, part of what we have to do is harmonize learning speeds so that we can stay in a state of coherence. Let me tell the story because I think it is exactly what's happening. I believe I told it in The Power of It. If you haven't listened to The Power of It with Rappaport and Fitz, I would recommend it. There's also a story from Jung that's my favorite story. I think I tell it in The Power of It, but you can find it on the website by doing a search for Karma Means You Don't Get Away with Anything. And I would strongly recommend you listen to Power of It and Karma Means You Don't Get Away with Anything. But I'm going to tell the story again now. It was 1994, and the smartest young tech guy who worked for me at Hamilton Securities, he and I would go out and have dinner and talk about what we were learning. And we had a phenomenal technology infrastructure at Hamilton. We were, you know, as soon as anything came out, we would get it. We would try it. We were way ahead of the pack. Interestingly enough, when MCI studied how they wanted to integrate phone and computers and telephony in their offices, they came to see how we designed our offices. And it was quite amazing. So we were really prototyping and working with lots of different kinds of technologies and doing websites when that just first started. Anyway, so this guy and I were out in 1994, and one of the things we were talking about was what would this mean to greater society? Because one of the things we discovered was that people who were good at the technology were developing higher and higher learning metabolisms. And as their learning metabolism got higher and higher, it threw them out of alignment with people who didn't want to learn or change. And so you had groups that were shooting ahead in terms of learning metabolism and groups that weren't. And the groups that weren't were getting angry. And so you had these amazing sort of, I used to call I used to say the data beast is landing and the data beastie is causing these wars. And but you really had learning or shifts in learning metabolism throwing different groups, really causing these gaps and throwing people out of alignment. So I said to this guy, well, what is it going to do when you take a system and you radically increase the learning metabolism? What happens? And he said, you know, I have a friend who's a physicist out at Lawrence Livermore. Let me call them and see what they say. So he gets up, we're having dinner and it's dark and they're, you know, sort of candlelight and we're in Washington. He gets up and you still had payphones in those days. He went to the back of the restaurant and called this guy, Lawrence Livermore, out on the West Coast. So we're East Coast. They're 3 hours behind. So maybe it's 8 o'clock in Washington. It's 5 o'clock in Lawrence Livermore. The guy's still in his office. So he calls this guy and he talks to him. And he comes back and he sits down and he looks at me and he says, my friend says that when the learning metabolism in a system goes up, the rate of entropy increases. And just as he said that, and this has only happened to me one time in my life, suddenly, in the middle of the table, above the candlelight, there was literally a hologram. And it was a hologram of two arcs of light sweeping through this mass. And as the two arcs literally crossed, it was very Sistine Chapel. One arc goes up to the light, and it's quite beautiful and dazzling. And the other arc takes all the mass, and it goes to sort of like a dead, dark lump. And as the two arcs cross, one going to the light and the other going to the dark, there's a huge pop. And I jump back, and I said, did you see that? And he said, see what? He hadn't seen a thing. So I literally had a holographic vision that was unbelievably real. It was, to me, it was completely real and dramatic and beautiful and amazing. It, just as a graphic experience, it was extraordinary. And we then proceeded to talk about what happened when things come apart, because one side goes to the light and the other goes to the dark. And you have this separation. And you literally see, as Trump goes into Washington, he's got this group of doers. So they're not lawyers. They're not process people. They're doers. They're business people. They're deal people. They're philanthropists. They're generals. They're people who do. And they're people who deal with concrete stuff. They deal with oil and gas. They deal with coal. They deal with, you know, things in the heartland. They're not people who are just limited to New York, DC, you know, Hollywood, Silicon Valley. These are not digital people. These are not intellectual capital people. These are people who deal in the, you know, many of them in the heartland with real stuff. So Tillerson is a guy who's dealt with, you know, tankers that go down and oil wells that blow up, and he's dealt with it all over the world. So these people are people who do, and they're going in there and they're raising the learning metabolism, you know, in ways which for Washington is shocking and completely oblivious to process. And you're watching that dynamic of the rate of entropy increasing. And some people are going to shift and go to the light, and some people aren't. They're going to go to the dark. And the reality is it's a dangerous process. But the reality is we were stuck in a negative return on investment system. And if you continue to stay in a negative return on investment system, you are all going down. And so the question is, if you stir the pot and get a bunch of doers who are trying to push it to a positive return on investment system, can you make it? And it reminds me again of that wonderful quote I always use from my great ally, Thomas Hupp, when he says, the bigger the breakdown, the bigger the breakthrough. So we have to do this because we can't stay in negative return on investment. And we certainly can't stay now that the debt growth model is over, because you can't finance a negative return system anymore, which is why Trump is going. And there are a lot of people in Washington who are taking it personally, or in the country, and attacking Trump when, in fact, it's not Trump. It's the end of the debt growth model. He's just the guy the deep state have sent in and said, okay, well, you know, this guy, you know, better they yell at him than they yell at us. So send this guy in. Maybe he can get the Titanic to turn, because the Titanic has to turn. And that's why, when Michael Moore said Trump is a Molotov cocktail, I said, okay, well, we can't stay stuck in a negative return on investment investment economy. So this guy is going to, you know, he's going to either turn it or die trying. And, you know, there's a lot of risk to that, but it's certainly much, much less than the risk of not trying it, because that was the risk of staying in it for another 4 years was death. So we were all going to the dark if we stayed in it for another 4 years. Anyway, so that's the story. And I believe it is unbelievably informative about exactly what is happening today. And the reason I keep saying we all need to be Titanic turners is we need to go to the light. If enough people go to the light and don't run around trying to grab the ring, it's right out of Lord of the Rings, you know, then the light can win the day. It can really work, but it's going to take every one of us. So that's it in closing. Next week, as I said, great interview with Richard Dolan, the deep state, or it's the breakaway civilization and Trump budget politics with Richard Dolan. The following week, we're doing the Exchange Stabilization Fund with Rob Kirby. Kirby knows a lot about the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and that's a part of the hidden system of finance, which is important to understand. So I'm glad that he agreed to do that when I'm up in Toronto. March 16th, I've gotten several requests for a tutorial on how to unpack how the money works around you. And so I'm going to do a live webinar tutorial for the Solari Report on March 16th called Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem. And I'm going to give you a little tutorial on how to unpack how mostly the government credit, spending, taxes, and other monies and assets work around you, and set it up so we can have a live chat and you can ask questions. And as many people as I can get working on documenting, because one of the things I'm going to ask everybody to do is to start documenting what they've learned and how to do it. So I'm hoping, in fact, that some of you will certainly have a transcript, but we'll certainly sort of play along and post messages on the subscriber comment area. So that's it. Until March 2nd with Richard Dolan. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.